you ever have to deal with anyone who was showing signs of strain or
Yes. There was one occasion I remember particularly. It was just a game with more 355 reserve. A lad had a problem, and he was complaining about the way he'd been treated by the NCO, and he was getting a little difficult, and he worried about possibly getting killed and that sort of thing. And I spent about half an hour or an hour with him. I think he was a little happier at the end, but I didn't hear any more about it anyway.
Anyone sent back, either officer or man, because of
strain,
battle strain, whatever?
Again, I can't recall. I would imagine that some could have been, I don't know, but I personally didn't have any experience of anybody that was sent back either. But then on the other hand, I mean, a young lad called Sawbridge, he wrote the diary on what happened in Korea. Marvellous thing it is. And he reckoned that he'd actually seen a bear on .210. Well, it was absolutely desolate. I wouldn't have thought that anything would have been survived. And this was the middle of winter too, you know, January time. So anyway, I see no reason at all to disbelieve that particular lad. He was very, very meticulous and very honest and down-to-earth chap. Have you seen the... it's well worth getting hold of. John Lightyear.
Have the snows arrived by now?
Oh, yes. Snow and frost. Freezing conditions. I was telling you there how difficult it was to keep the weapons working and to dig. Yep. Definitely.
And part of
your
role, no doubt, was to ensure that the men were healthy.
Yes, the big problem was frostbite, and for that reason, we had to change over the standing patrols very much more regularly than we normally did. They would probably be only out for about an hour. The difficulty was getting it right, the balance right. You didn't want to be trundling around, making all the sort of noises backwards and forwards every hour. Or every 10 minutes or whatever, to alert whoever might be snooping around on the other side. But at the same time, you had to balance it so that they didn't get frostbite while they were out. As soon as the bad weather started, Jim Lovridge, who was then head border company commander, he started to make coke, which we then issued to the sentries. And it was amazing the amount of heat that a little can with a glowing coke inside used to throw out. It kept people warm. Each one would have his own little can of coke burning away with his hands on. But no, we used to give those to the standing patrols as well to keep them a little bit happier. But that was the snag. That was the main problem, keeping them free from frostbite, because it was really cold.
Okay, you managed to contain
in the main, yes. I think one or two people did get beginnings of frostbite, but I don't think anybody lost any limbs or anything because of frostbite.
Was trench feet the problem? Were your feet kept dry?
These cold weather boots were absolutely marvellous. They really were marvellous. And a little bit of foot rot maybe, but certainly not bad trench foot. It wasn't something that one was aware of, you know, as being a problem at all. And certainly I never nailed anything. Not even the cold.
Presumably in the front line, they wouldn't get their clothes off until the end of the tour or whatever it was.
That's right, yes.
Uh-huh. So they lived, ate, slept in clothing.
They would probably strip off a bit to get have a wash and a shower. I mean, Peter used to insist on that sort of thing, you know. You would have a bunch of zombies running around with a three-day-old stubble of beard on their faces, so that they had to strip down to a certain extent in order to have a decent wash. You know. And I would imagine that they used to do it myself with the more meticulous people that would have a stand-up bath. You know. But we used to have regular relief down back to the bath unit. so that, you know, you were able to keep reasonably clean.
And the patrols, the standing patrols that were out in front, did they wear snow camouflage?
No. Even we didn't even wear snow camouflage when we were out on you know, fighting patrol, well, fighting patrol, even with the rescue patrol. Well, you didn't want particularly to be seen. I never wore that winter stuff. No.
Well, these were usually at night anyway, weren't they?
Yes. Yeah.
Is there anything else whilst we're on point 210?
Not that I can think of. There's just one little incident. I was a man called Jack Lloyd. I became quite friendly with him. He was 2IC of one of the other companies, D, I think. He and I went down to Sewell on one occasion. Just we could sell bottles down in Sewell. No, not Sewell. Yes, it was Sewell. Yes, it was. For company funds, you know, we used to be able to collect. And I also dropped a clanger, another clanger. I was looking for extra felt, I think it was. And I went back to the RE headquarters, CRE, and asked for two rolls of felt to put on me. And the chap said, yes, right, what unit? And I was saying, and I signed for it, and took it away, thinking I was going to, he'd given it to me, you know. And the next thing I knew was Peter Jeffries. Where have you been? I said, what do you mean? He said, I have an indent here. The quartermaster is livid. You've got an indent for two rolls of felt, of roofing felt. And you signed it. Where is it? I said, see, in the company. I said, he told me he was giving it to me. He told me he was giving it to me. We've gone through the process, you know, and George Flanagan was absolutely wound up about this, and Peter was wound up because I'd gone through the wrong channel. It was innocent fraud.
When you left that point 210, where did you go then?
Oh, this was at Camp Casey. The move out of 210 was terrible because it was freezing cold, everything was frozen stiff, and trying to get vehicles and men out at night, out onto into the assembly areas for the vehicles, and then getting the vehicles away and back to Camp Casey. It was absolute hell. It really was terrible. And I was bloody thankful that I wasn't in command of the motor patrol at that time, because John Arnott was, and Peter Jeffries had told him, I want you out of that position with all your vehicles by first light. And almost inevitably, the thing slipped off, the carrier slipped off the road and got stuck in the ditch on the side of the road, albeit underneath the camouflage and everything, but he was still there at dawn. And I think Peter really did race into him. I mean, there was that. Peter was that sort of man, you know, his orders were get out, and if you didn't get out, there was no excuse, which was fair enough. And I think John got a bit browned off about this, and he was telling me about, I'm going to go and join the Somerset Light Infantry in Malaya, so I'm not staying here, but this sort of, at a point of fact, he was made a 2IC of a company, I don't know which one it was, and if he hadn't dropped that clang, he would have. He got an MC eventually anyway, but he did a very good job of work, and he exonerated himself by the time we left. But it was, you know, it was most unfortunate. I was pretty glad that I wasn't commanding him, because there was nothing he could do, and he was struggling. But he actually got them out eventually, but it was only when daylight he could see what he was doing that he managed to do it. Anyway, we went from there to Camp Casey, which was in Corps or Army Reserve. The whole of the Commonwealth Division was withdrawn from the front line for the first time since it was formed, I think. And we were sent out to this ghastly place called Camp Casey. I hated it. But I was talking to some of the soldiers, and they were saying that, of course, it wasn't too bad at all. It was quite enjoyable.
Can you describe it? What was the camp like?
Well, it was a tented camp for a start, but it did have permanent sort of structures, which were officers' mess, sergeants' mess, the men's dining hall, toilets, those sort of things. But our individual accommodation was tented. But it had been occupied by the American 2 Division, and it was in a mess, really. The toilets, for instance, were the, I don't know what they'd done, but the toilet turds, you know, were sticking up above the seats rather than move. So what first thing we had to do was to dig new trenches for the toilets, but then it had been so often used that it was very difficult to find ground that wasn't foul. You know, when you do move a toilet, you fill the old one in and put a sign on foul ground. But it was very difficult to find a patch of ground which hadn't been fouled previously. You know, and it was one of the more unpleasant things about the place. It was bleak. I didn't like it at all. There was plenty of stuff going on. We had company, platoon, company, battalion exercises going on all the time. There was lots of entertainment, people coming, professional entertainment entered. We were visited by all and sundry while we were there.
Do you remember any of them that came?
Not really. I think Frankie Howard, who was you made the entertainer? Yeah, I think Frankie Howard was one. I don't know who the... There was usually a well-known male entertainer or a star, female star, and they were usually accompanied by a minor female or male entertainer. The Australians sent out some sort of answer people as well, who were very good. There was lots of that going on. We used to play football a lot. Italian games against. There was a lot of entertainment as well. We were entertained by the Indian field ambulance, beautiful curries, you know, and all the people who were, most of the senior folks were dashing off every day, practically as often as they could, to go and have a curry with the Indians in the field ambulance. They were very friendly too, and most of them were Anglo-Indians. The training was fierce. We did a lot of training. I did a lot of training. Again, I remember it was a retreat, if I remember rightly, that we were practicing. And I had the company twice used jeep with a trailer with all the cooking gear and all that sort of stuff on. By working with Jim, I was able always to have a cup of tea and something hot ready for them when they arrived from any direction. And I don't know what happened, but Peter Jeffries suddenly appeared, and he's saying, "How do you manage that?" I said, "Well, Jim, you know, it's potluck. If we have it, if it doesn't work, then it doesn't work. If they don't arrive on time, then that's it." He said, "Let me have a look in that trailer, which Trump pulled over." In order to move quickly and highly disorganized, I used to sling everything into the cook, sling everything into the trailer, no system about it. And he said, "My God!" And he was disgusted. But as far as I'm concerned, we were doing the job, you know, we were coming. Jim said it was marvelous. It's marvelous how you were able to have that thing. But it disgusted Peter to see such disorganisation working well, you know. I think he remembers that one.
So this training was Italian?
Italian, and eventually it was brigade as well, yes. We were training with the Australians, who hated it. They hated it. I wasn't all that keen on it myself, but the Aussies were bloody obstreperous. You know. They had no respect for anybody, really, and their officers used to have a terrible time. They were good in the line, but They would be slouching along with their kit hanging all over the place, and they're smoking and sweating and looking like a complete and utter rabble, you know. And they were supposed to be supporting us in a brigade up, a brigade exercising. I love the Aussies. I thought they were absolute. Give me a minute. They were first class to have around you. If you had the Aussies on either side or in front of you, no worry.
Presumably, yeah. You'd have to be willing to put up with their
idiosyncrasies. Oh, yes, well, come on. No. How you doing, come on. Foster's beer was there. They used to have gallons of it. There was no restriction, as far as I could see, on them when they were in the line. They used to be whatever they wanted it. In fact, I don't know how true it was, but I had heard that they used to take on patrol, they would take out a bottle of rum and drink it while they were out. And of course, finishing up, you know, about 2 yards from the Chinese position, shouting, "Come out, you bastards." But I never witnessed that or even heard them shouting like that. But certainly they were allowed and consumed large quantities of alcohol anywhere, wherever they happened to be.
What was it about camp
casing?
Was it just the miserable?
Just miserable. To me, it was miserable. I got to like the order and the camaraderie of the line, and that seemed to go to a certain extent when we got to camp casing. I've got a photograph of myself standing, looking absolutely browned off to blazes, you know, because of the tents weren't, they weren't secure for a start. I remember waking up one night knowing that there was somebody in the place. The next morning, my watch was gone. The chap, as soon as he was aware that I was awake, he shot off. And he managed to just grab something, presumably, and it happened to be my watch. You were under the eagle eye as well. There was a certain degree of independence when you were in the line, and the company was the unit. When out of it, the camp case, it was mesh discipline and mesh couch. The seniority, Oscar Norman was bad for that. He was very conscious of the fact that he was senior officer, and the mesh was his domain, sort of thing. I remember getting a break off him once because I ordered two bottles of Guinness in a pint glass. You know. So why do you do that? It's absolute greed. Just have two. Just have a bottle and then have another one later on, but don't get a pint like that. In the middle of the mess. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And it was like that. It wasn't world dressing up for meals in the evening, anything like that. But there was an air of starchiness, you know, which I didn't like to. I got used to the relaxed atmosphere and the friendliness of the front line, you know.
Regimental bone polish? Was that involved?
Well, there was a little bit more of it, but not. There couldn't be too much because we didn't have the gear for one thing, you know. There's no point polishing the boots until they shone when they're going to be clean, yes, but not shining bright. As far as it was possible, they would. There were parades as well. I think one of the parades that I was on was when we were at Camp Casey. But my main relief was that I went on mile and a half. On Camp Casey.
Rest
and recuperation.
That was when you went over to Japan.
Japan, yes. Uh-huh. I went with John Arnott and Jervis Percy and Peter Greenwood.
And in Japan, where were you housed? Hotels or?
Yeah, it was a leave centre, and it was very, very comfortable and very good. But it didn't spend all that much time in it, really. In fact. People like the Canadians and that sort of thing, they never went into the. They used to go into the nearest Brussels and live there for the 5 days. You know. In fact, my last evening there, I met out. I'd met an American girl who was quite a pleasant lass. And on the last evening, I said, oh, I wouldn't bother, I'd just stay in. And I thought, well, I'll go and have a meal. So I went to the gate and I said to the taxi driver, just take me, I just want something to eat, something local. And I said, I don't want any women or anything like that. And he drove me straight to the nearest brothel. This is where I met the Canadian bloke. Because he said, come into my room. He said, I've got plenty of whiskey there. And about three of us went in with him. And he was offering his girlfriend. You know, he said, I've got another bedroom next door. This sort of thing. And he'd been there for the whole 5 days. But it was very difficult to get away from, actually. The first thing one did, certainly I did, and John Arnott and Peter and Jervis, we went to called the sauna, Turkish bath, had a Turkish bath to get all the grime off. It was a hell of a lot of grime involved as well. You didn't realise, how dirty you had got. Even there, it was all very suggestive and that sort of thing. And then we went to do all the usual things that happened there.
What were the Japanese like? How did you find them?
They were all right. They didn't have much choice, really, I suppose, then, to be anything but pleasant. One tended to have more to do with the women than the blokes. But they accepted the fact that we were there. Of course, we were in a much bigger minority, mostly American, of course. We were just sort of one face in about 100,000 as far as compared to the number of Americans. But they made us welcome enough.
The prices, were they high?
Haven't a clue.
Presumably it was rest, as you say, and was sightseeing in part? Did you get any sightseeing?
Well, we went to the Imperial Palace. I've got a photograph of myself standing outside it. Other than that, I think we went to the Ginza, I think it's called. There's some part of Tokyo which is bright lights, that sort of thing. Cabarets and nightclubs and that sort of thing. We went to a few of those. I can't remember that it was any particularly expensive. I can't remember really taking how much money I took with me or what I did with it. I presume I'd pay for things in the nightclubs and things like that. But I never felt there was a shortage of money, so it must have been adequate enough.
And you say it was 5 days, and then you were back again.
It was 5 days, full days, and at the end of it, we got an extra day, cost of flights or something back. And similarly, at the beginning, by the time we got settled in, counted from the next day. So I was away from Bhutan for about 8 days.
And this was back to Camp Casey?
Casey, yeah.
It must have been a huge camp if it was a
big camp. It was, yeah. Still there. When we went back, and a couple of years ago, we were talking to some Americans at Panmunjom, which they occupied. And I was saying, what a terrible place it was. Oh, she said, it's still there. There's an American top sergeant woman. And she said, oh, it's still there. She said, it's great now. They must have developed it into a more permanent establishment than it used to be. We didn't actually see it, but she said it was absolutely fantastic. So it would be equivalent to going down to Seoul for a holiday, I should think. But it was pretty dreadful as far as I keep saying as far as I was concerned, because I understand that from others that they didn't find it too bad at all. They quite enjoyed it.
There was plenty of entertainment and leisure and
Yes, I suppose that's why they, and it was more permanent, they had the canteen and the messes were buildings.
The battalion routine would be basically the same as
yes, peacetime, yes. So the valley and lights out and that sort of thing, yes. Cookhouse, the morning parade, yes.
Had there been any establishment, not on the British side probably, but had there been any establishment for brothels or troops near the line?
No, there were certainly no official brothels. I don't think they would have dared to do that. While we were in Camp Casey, incidentally, we were visited by the Bishop of Liverpool, Catholic Archbishop of Liverpool, that's right. In fact, I think it was a man called Heenan, who he eventually became Cardinal. And he had undertaken to have words with every Catholic that was out there. And he had a word chat to me. And he said, I will let your wife know that I have spoken to you and that you're well and that I'll send her love and all that kind of thing. And he did. He wrote to her and said that he met me. And she's got the letter still somewhere. I don't know where it is. What was that about? What was the question again?
You say it was a tented camp, and we're still in the winter here. No,
we're coming out of the winter, actually. Yes, it was. This would be about April, I think, spring. It wasn't all that warm because the wind was coming down from the north, you know. But there was no snow or anything like that. There was a little bit of rain, but not much. It was about like it was when we actually went back this time in April last 2 years, 3 years ago. Yes, it was. It had some bad days, rain and that sort of thing. But in the main, it was quite warm, cool in the morning, not hot like it was in the summer.
But the tents were dry, were they? They in that sense.
Yes. And it wasn't. There's no snow or anything like that. Yeah.
Have you any other memories of Camp Casey?
Not really. You're talking about brothers I've ever wondered. What was that? I can't remember. I'd been sent back by who was it now? Jim, I think, to go see if I could get some money for bottles or something. And to Wee John Boo, a place called Wee John Boo. And when I came back to my vehicle, it was deserted. And I eventually found the driver in a brothel. And I remember racing into him about how stupid he was, because the guaranteed almost that it was a bit dangerous. And I looking back, I'm not quite sure whether it was frustration on my part or whether it was genuinely felt, ticking off and being stupid, whether I was just jealous or not. That was just sort of a vague memory. It was a kind of bloke as well.
Throughout the time in Korea, was mainly a problem. Was BD a problem with the battalion?
BD, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, the R&R was one of the problems. You had to be very careful. Not careful. I mean, you had to take precautions if you could. Yes. It was. It was not only our battalion; it was every battalion. It's something that when I'm talking about health, that was a problem. Yes. It wasn't just the soldiers either.
Did you see much of the civilians, Korean civilians?
No. We didn't see anything of them. What do you mean at Camp Casey?
Well, not overall.
No, not really. We saw a bit more of them at Camp Casey because there was villages just round about, and they were unwelcome from that point of view because they were on the make. You know, they were stealing things and generally making a bit of a nuisance of themselves. And personally, I never really came into contact with any civilians apart from what the odd woman that happened to be. When we went on R&R, we stayed overnight at the hotel in Seoul, and there were hostesses there, you know. But never. The only Koreans that we really came across in any way regularly